In my films, I explore the relationship between man and natural world. I have no interest in narrative. Narrative is for children.
Out!
Where are we?
We are in New Zealand, Boris. Land of long white clouds.
But that is a Western country.
Welcome back to Public Address Radio on Radio Live. Stephen Sinclair is a successful playwright and screenwriter. He brought us Ladies' Night in 87, splatter movies like Meet the Feebles and Brain Dead, epic dramas like Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers, plus poetry and kids' books. With his latest script, Russian Snark, Stephen has made his debut as a feature film director, and it's very nice to be here with you.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle.
Stephen, Russian Snark opened in New Zealand theatres just in the last couple of weeks, but we all heard a whole lot about it at the Film and TV Awards last year when it was basically nominated for everything. That's probably quite a nice way to launch a movie around the country.
Yeah, I think it sort of, from a lot of people, just sort of came out of nowhere. And we got six nominations and actually won one award for Steph Tawavihi, who got Best Supporting Actress.
Yeah.
And... yeah, we were really blast. You know, it was a big blast for us because it's especially as a micro budget movie. It was, you know, it was a good feeling. It was contending with these million-dollar, multi-million-dollar projects. Yeah.
Let's start by telling us a bit about the movie. It's based sort of loosely on a true story.
It is. Well, my first step really was I wanted to write a feature using Steve Papps and Yelena, because I'd made a short film with them and thought they worked well together. So, and then when I sort of think about what kind of subject matter I could use, I remembered this extraordinary story of this Russian couple who basically floated across the Pacific from Vladivostok in this tiny converted life craft. And I'd heard at the time that he was a novelist. That turned out to be wrong, but anyway, I thought he was a novelist, and I decided to turn him into a filmmaker so I could give me more sort of visual opportunities.
And so the focus is on basically he comes to New Zealand hoping to be able to be freer with his artistic work, is that
right? Yeah, he's a very dour and flexible filmmaker who did well during the Soviet era, but hasn't really kept up with the times, and so his star has been fading ever since, and he decides that he'll come across the world to kickstart his career here in New Zealand.
So the tension in the movie is him wanting to be a great artist producing great work, and his wife ends up trying to keep the family together, the body and soul together.
That's right, yeah. This is sort of central theme, if you like, which is expressed in the tagline, is it better to be a good man or great artist? And it's certainly something that he struggles with.
Have you managed to be both?
Have I? I'm probably not the wrong person to ask on both counts, actually.
Well, we've got your wife here. It is an interesting point, though, isn't it? You find that more creative people are, the more interested in their projects, they tend to be very single-minded, very focused.
Yeah.
And often that is at the expense of their relationship, their personal life.
Sure. I mean, it's incredibly hard to get ahead in the arts, or any aspect of the arts, really. And people do have to become incredibly single-minded. And things like relationships usually suffer as a result.
What conclusion have you come to in your lifetime?
In my life?
Yeah.
I think it's crazy to actually commit all your energy and passion and just into your work, especially if you have a family. Because you might finish up an old man and wonder why no one's, none of your kids are talking to you.
Famous but lonely.
Yeah, yeah. That's right. Your films aren't going to be comforting you when you're at death's door.
Yeah.
There is also that great school of thought that you can't really make great art unless you're in the process of suffering at the time. That rock stars' third albums, once they've got the limos and the Learjets, are usually boring pep. Do you find that's true, though, if you're too contented at home, that you find it difficult to go out and, release your pain?
I don't know. I think most most artists who think that way sort of suffer needlessly, And...
Yeah.
So you think you can create great work from with your feet up on the lazy boy of life?
Well, I mean, who is completely relaxed, satisfied, happy. Mm-hmm. Anyway, you know, writer, non-writer.
We can make ourselves quite anxious.
Everyone's screwed up on the inside, you know that.
Yep. Michelle's got a $200 a day chronic habit. I didn't want to say anything about it.
No, we've talked about that before. Yeah. So the synopsis sounds sort of quite dark, really, but I'm assuming, because it's you, that there's some comedy in there as well.
Yeah, there is. There is. And it's quite bizarre, really. I mean, what I wanted to do was sort of ride the line between dark and comedy. And so it had some very surprising outcomes. I mean, at one stage, my hero, Misha, tries to hang himself. And at one screening I was at, it got the biggest laugh of the whole evening. So,
how does that feel? When you've shot a film, a scene like that, how does that feel when the response is not what you anticipated or intended?
I was intrigued, really. But as I say, I mean, I try and sort of leave it up to the viewer to make their own minds up whether something's hilarious or not. And, you know, and similarly with stuff that I thought was very funny, people were sort of watching it, you know, with frowns on their faces, and I was thinking, oh, well, that's
the best comedy does sort of teeter on the edge of bleakness and darkness and uncomfortable, you know, situations and so forth, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The sort of stuff that I get into, is it? Yeah, definitely.
You're not going to put canned laughter throughout the thing, are you?
Yeah, no. Well, that's right. I'm just avoiding the whole thing of underlining comedy, really.
Mm. It's interesting to me that you have quite a nice device in the film, in that because he is an avant-garde filmmaker, or what is that the right word to use for you know, your central characters, the way he likes to shoot, you get to experiment with that form as well.
Yeah, and I loved it, actually. And even before we shot the movie, I went out with a friend, Nick Monks, who's a photographer, and we did sort of like some stills photo shoots of like figures in sort of against rock formations and stuff like that. I loved it. So it was great to have an opportunity to use that. And also just kind of, create the contrast between the black and white sort of very sort of composed shots of the film within a film with the main sort of stuff in colour.
Was that a bit of a learning curve? I mean, this was your directorial debut.
Mm.
What sort of learning curve did that entail for you to go, look, I want to shoot, you know, eventually I want to be shooting a plain film, you know, where a normal film with an avant-garde film set within it?
Well, I mean, I've shot several short films, so I wasn't completely sort of like, unfamiliar with the whole thing, but having said that, there were lots of issues, you know, during the shoot where I was sort of, oh God, am I managing? The whole thing of time management is a big bogey, because you can, you know, you can spend a hell of a lot of time shooting stuff that will only finish up like 30 seconds in your film, and then find yourselves having to shoot basically 7 minutes in one day, which happened to us on one occasion.
I wanted to ask, kind of along those lines, that in lots of your other projects, it's been a collaborative thing. You've worked with Anthony McCartan as a writer, or Stephen Papps on Blowing It.
Yeah, sure.
So this time you wrote the script and you were directing it, so it was less of a collaboration than it usually is?
I guess so. I mean, I consider when you're directing, it's a kind of form of collaboration, the work you do with actors. And, you know, I'd change lines around as we went if I thought things could, you know, there were ways of improving stuff and took on board, you know, the suggestions of the actors. So in that sense, it's collaborate. Yeah, I'm still collaborating.
Yeah.
Do you feel that this was the sort of realisation of a very long pathway towards doing something essentially on your very own in terms of writing, directing?
I suppose so. I mean, in the last 10, 15 years, most of my stuff, I guess, has been sole efforts. And, you know, I'm getting older and more opinionated.
I was going
to
say,
find it harder and harder to work with other people. So I was wondering, sort of natural process. Yeah.
I can see that happening in myself as well. You know, you become less tolerant of people. So in the end, it's just going to be you in a room, shooting one man productions. Is it shooting, filming, acting, directing, writing?
No, I don't. I'm never going to.
What comes next? I mean, the weird thing about movies, in a sense, is that they're finished a long time before anybody gets to see them. So you must be well into the next project.
Yeah, I'm working on a couple of film scripts. One with Liz DeFury, my producer, which we hope to shoot in Coromandel. Trying to kick it along, yeah.
Well, look, that's all we've got time for. Thank you so much for coming along. It looks like the Russian Snark's playing in a lot of great cinemas around the country as well. I had a look at some of the places it's popping up. It's very interesting. So a chance for people to get out there. Yeah. For more information, go to russiansnark.com. After the break, live music from Avalanche City.